Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Rush Limbaugh, the most listened to radio host, a deeply polarizing figure, and the leading voice in conservative media for a generation, dies at 70.
Conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh has died, losing his battle with lung cancer. He launched an industry of voices on radio and cable, a champion to conservatives, but drawing outrage over many years with his comments on women, race, and politics.
Limbaugh had been suffering from lung cancer. His wife announced his death at the start of his radio show today.
I, like you, very much wish Rush was behind this golden microphone right now.
Yeah, this was a, we knew this was coming, obviously, after the announcement that Rush had gotten cancer, and after watching him over the years and seeing him since the announcement, and of course seeing him when he got the, you know, the presidential nod during the State of the Union, it was obvious that the end was coming. But that doesn't make it any less awful when you find out. Rush Limbaugh, not obviously on our station, on a competitor station, but talk about a icon in the conservative movement. If I wouldn't have my job, my job wouldn't exist. Davis, your job wouldn't exist. Mark's job wouldn't exist without Rush Limbaugh. I know yesterday I was kind of talking about this on my Facebook page, and some of my liberal friends, to varying degrees, either attacking him or just kind of baffled as to why somebody like me would celebrate somebody like him, because we do talk radio, I hope, so very differently. I did not agree with Rush a lot of the time, not so much in terms of his opinions, but the way of doing talk radio, you know, very polarizing, very, controversial, as you well know, not nearly as controversial as is made out compared to a lot of others in the talk radio world. I mean, you know, compare him. I mean, he's moderate in tone compared to somebody like, say, Michael Savage, you know, right? So, but even Savage, his radio program existed because Rush happened first. Sean Hannity wouldn't have, I mean, nobody would know who Sean Hannity was. Nobody would know who Laura Ingraham is. Nobody would know who Glenn Beck is. Nobody would know who any, Fox News, for goodness sakes, probably wouldn't exist without Rush Limbaugh. Not that he founded it, but that what he did first made everything else happen thereafter. You know, he took a dying medium, AM radio. You know, music had all gone to FM, and AM was trying to figure out how it could exist. And it was kind of like sports, you know? And there was talk, but the idea of getting on the air and giving an opinion over and over, you know, giving a lot of opinions, being opinion driven, and talking politics in the middle of the day for 3 hours without guests, and doing bits and sarcasm and satire and musical parodies and, you know, using words like feminazis. I mean, what he did was so original. I mean, he created, like, if you think of music, you know, it'd be like, imagine if until a certain person came along, there was just no country music, you know, or no rock and roll. And then there was a person who did a thing and you had country or you had rock and roll. That's Rush Limbaugh in terms of the history of conservative entertainment media and comment media in this country. Heck, all of the liberal. Now, radio never worked for the liberals. It never has. Just they've tried over the years. And, you know, what is it? Radio America? Was that the one that, like, tried and failed? I mean, it was, you know, it's just never worked for them very well. But all of that, even MSNBC wouldn't exist if it weren't for Rush Limbaugh. Because what he did was so pioneering. You know, so for all of those people like me who work in this industry, many of whom tried to be Rush over the years, many of whom tried to be not Rush over the... I've tried to be not Rush over the years. But, you know, and so... But I listened to him. I mean, I used to. I haven't listened to him much in quite a while. But, I used to listen to him a fair bit. You know, spawning the Limbaugh listening rooms around the country. You know, I said that his style was not my style. Like, that arrogant style that... You know, definitely divisive, polarizing, a little swift and loose with the facts pretty frequently. That's not me. That, you know, I can't do radio his way. I don't want to do radio his way. But I will absolutely admit that I am grateful that he did radio, because what he did paved the way for people like me. And I'd be doing if I weren't doing this, and I would not be doing this if it hadn't been for him. So it's a sad day. And to listen to some of the, you know, I guess you'd call them obituary reporting yesterday. Some were better than others. I think NBC and CBS were relatively fair. You know, they just didn't quite know what to do with themselves, you know, because they hated him. I mean, they did a deep hatred for him. ABC let it out. I mean, ABC just, they spent their 2-minute obit last night shredding him on the 6:30 news. 6:30, I don't know, it's always on tape, I can never, 5:30 out, it doesn't matter, but their evening newscast with David Muir was just, you know, well, he had opioid addictions, and, you know, here's what he did wrong, and here's all the people he offended. Like, you can't just take a moment and talk about, I mean, you would sound, it sounds like he was a criminal to listen to them recap it. And here you have tens of millions of Americans absolutely adored this man, and they just treat him like he's some, you know, well, I guess we have to acknowledge that he passed away. How about you acknowledge that what he did, probably more than anything else, was speak for people who felt like nobody spoke for them? I mean, Donald Trump would not have been president without Rush Limbaugh. No chance. Because Donald Trump did the same thing. You know, over and over and over again, what I've heard from people about, you know, who really love Trump is, he says what I think. And even if he doesn't say what I think, he says what he thinks. And it's nice to hear somebody say what they actually think. Limbaugh came along at a time when, you know, leftist censorship, political correctness, the early version of the now virulent cancel culture was in its heyday. And he just called it for what it was all the time. And they hated him for it. But there were millions and millions and millions of people that couldn't wait every day to hear him say a better version of what they believed. A sharper, more sarcastic, more insightful, clearer version of the basic things that they knew in their heart were true and that nobody was saying in mass media or print journalism. You know, the beginning of the end of the credibility premise for mass media was Rush Limbaugh, because he was the first one to really say in public all the ways they get it wrong, all the biases that they have. So, you know, we're going to spend some time today, probably every hour. Well, I will say this, every hour, at least talking about him a little bit. And you can feel free to share your views, 437-1620. And, you know, maybe you didn't like the man. Maybe you didn't like what he did. You know, we take all calls. And he, you know, he believed in free speech. But, and again, I make it clear, a lot of the things about what he did and how he did it are not my taste, not my values. That's okay. I was absolutely glad that he did what he did, because, again, without him having done it, I don't know what I'd be doing. But I wouldn't be doing this, because you wouldn't have a news radio 92.3 and AM 1620 without Rush Limbaugh. You know, you wouldn't have any of these stations. And you probably wouldn't have a whole lot of other stuff as well. I will say this genuinely. I have no idea what America would look like if Rush Limbaugh hadn't come along. But I think it's pretty clear it wouldn't look like it looks right now. Some ways, maybe we'd be better. But in an awful lot of ways, we'd be very, very worse. 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Want to provide an update on this week's vaccine shipments. It's not a great day here in Florida weather-wise, but it's a heck of a lot worse in a lot of parts of the country. And so vaccine shipments are being delayed. Now, we did get the vast, vast majority of our Pfizer shipment this week. We received about 136,000 doses. We've got about 9,000 doses that are left. We think we're going to get those tonight or tomorrow morning. So that's not that disruptive.
Yeah, that's. I didn't know we were getting Pfizer vaccine here in Florida. I thought we were only getting the Moderna. That one has been more delayed.
The Moderna, though, that entire shipment is still yet to come. So we think it's going to come hopefully by Thursday or Friday. Normally, we would have all the Moderna by Tuesday or Wednesday of each week. So, and what's happened is you see all the storms, you see a lot of the ice. I think some of this stuff's just in Memphis or the places where they ship from. So it's a combination of the weather, the ice, and then obviously the different logistics that result from that.
Yeah, most definitely. Although we are expecting to start getting more vaccine in the state of Florida.
We do anticipate next week, as of right now, that we will see a net increase of 41,000 doses above and beyond what we got, what's due to come in this week. Obviously, we haven't gotten all the Moderna yet. So that'll be 41,000 additional.
Yeah, so that's good news. A little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. You know, nobody in the White House, by the way, seems to be clear about any kind of their timelines. If you ask Jen Psaki, if you ask Joe Biden, if you ask Kamala Harris, oh my God, the disastrous interview for Kamala Harris with NBC yesterday, where she neither knew anything nor could clarify anything, nor could she get any of her answers right. It was really, really bad. But so, you know, are we going to all be vaccinated by June, July, August? Is it going to be Christmas next year? Is it going to wait? You know, nobody knows. And that, you know, in a way, that's forgivable because it's a hard thing to pin down. But a little bit more all the time. I do love, by the way, the sort of presumptive grant that when Biden claims right now we've got 7 million, you know, we're 600 million doses of the vaccine in July. What? Come on. This is 4 months from now, maybe. You know, maybe. But you don't get to say right now we've got it then. You got to, you know, show me the money, right? 523 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
The FBI reportedly investigating New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for allegedly underreporting the number of coronavirus deaths at nursing homes. Federal prosecutors in Brooklyn also taking part in the investigation. NASA's latest Martian rover set to land on Mars this afternoon. It looks to be on target. NASA says lots can go wrong during what they call EDL, entry, descent, and landing. If Perseverance survives, it'll spend the next 2 years looking for more evidence of ancient microbial life. And you either loved him or hated him.
Greetings to you, conversationalists all across the fruited plain.
Conservative talk radio icon Rush Limbaugh has died of lung cancer at the age of 70. Limbaugh, widely considered one of the most influential media members of the past 50 years, using his far-reaching microphone to push conservative candidates and initiatives.
You know, you your career has been long enough that you can remember a time when there was news radio prior to or at the advent of Rush Limbaugh. What have you seen change? I mean, I to me, the whole landscape changed.
Oh yeah, it's changed. Not all of it for the better.
Right, absolutely. No, that's absolutely true.
But as you mentioned before, talk radio as we know it now would not exist.
Right.
Had it not been for Rush Limbaugh.
Clearly.
I was in Nashville when his show began in 1988, worked for the affiliate there that carried his show. And I would have to admit that for the first few years, I enjoyed listening to it until it changed.
Sure.
And became something that I didn't care for.
And there's, again, this is the point, is not everybody loved it or even affirmed the kind of thing that it was, but I cannot deny the importance.
Yeah, I can't deny that he changed the face of AM radio.
Absolutely. And by the way, just so you know, the entire time that you and I have worked together, I've been talking to you with half my brain tied behind my back.
Which half? The good one or the bad one?
Well, which way makes me look smarter?
Mark. And I do have formerly nicotine-stained fingers.
Well done. Yeah. Well done. See? All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 526 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
So I know an awful lot of you have terrible commutes right now, right? You know, you're working around this bridge, and once upon a time, you had a 20-minute commute, maybe 15 minutes, and the things you don't love about your car, you kind of, you know, put up with, because it's only 15 minutes. I mean, how bad can it be? And now it's like an hour and a half dealing with this discomfort or irritation or just that thing that you realize you'd been putting up with, and all of a sudden, when you're in your car that long, it's just infuriating. Well, okay, you shouldn't have to endure your car. You should enjoy your car. So go to Frontier Motors and find out how you can get one that you'll love, that you'll feel good about, that you won't have to put up with. And by the way, you know, you might think getting a newer used car might be more expensive, but, you know, if you think about it, the repairs that you do and then the uncertainty about whether it's going to work at any given time and then the, you know, well, do I or don't I put $1,500 or $2,000 when that big repair comes along? Stop asking those questions. Just get a used car that you're going to love. 1, 2, 3 years old, great condition, low mileage. That's what they specialize in. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, right behind that big buffalo. Be sure to tell them that your crummy car sent you. I would say that we have what I will describe as the first cracks in the wall of unity about the delivery date for the repairs on Three Mile Bridge. We learned yesterday, South Santa Rosa News, I think, had it first, but then others followed. And the basically FDOT is going to be coming to Milton today to do, I guess, a meeting with a little bit of briefing involved. And basically, it sounds like they think they're still going to be on track for the end of March, but the bridge may not be fully functional just yet. So what, you know, we'll know more later today, but the reports are basically that, and even, you know, Doug Broxson, he made the comment to Channel 3 last night, Senator Broxson said, you know, when the head of FDOT comes to town, it's probably not the best news. It might be something. So what we think is going to happen is that it's maybe going to be one lane in either direction, sort of total flow through. It might be that most of the bridge, the one span reopens, and then a part of it is just kind of choked down to two lanes, maybe on the Pensacola side. But we'll learn more later today. You know, is it really going to be the end of March, March 31st or April 1st? As, you know, they originally said, you know, it was going to be 6 months. And our original observation was, oh, great, that's April 1st. So I don't know what to tell you. We'll know more later today. But this is definitely the first big moment where there seems to be something a little bit other than our normal expectation of fully functional, at least for the car traffic, Three Mile Bridge new span being reopened at the end of March. But like I said, I don't want to be too pessimistic until we actually hear from them later on today.
Something I believe should be
recommendation, the chief of police shall live in, within an established permanent residency within the city of Pensacola.
One of the conversations, or one of the topics of conversation the other night at the Citizens Police Advisory Committee, that's Drew Buchanan, who is acting as the chairman of the committee. It's kind of interesting. They have, I hadn't thought about this before, but they have, I guess, three? My memory, I apologize, I cannot remember this for sure, but Jonathan Green, Lawrence Powell, and Drew Buchanan, I think, all ran for mayor. I mean, I know Drew and Jonathan did. I think, didn't Lawrence also? And he's sort of like he's not the official representative. It's more like Cedric Alexander from the PPD, but Lawrence is in the room. So you got three mayoral candidates and the mayor, actual mayor, sitting in there. You know, there were two other people, Greg Litton, and who was the sixth person? I can see him. He's a friend.
Greg Litton,
Greg ran for Bender's spot.
He ran for Bender's spot.
Okay. Anyway, going digging deep in the memory banks here. In any case, it suddenly occurs to me Brian Spencer ran. Yeah.
He was the runoff.
You're right. That's right. That was the runoff against Grover. Well done, Davis. All right. Anyway, it just kind of suddenly struck me that you have, on the council or on the Citizens Police Advisory Committee, you have two former mayoral candidates who ran against Grover, plus one who ran against him that's not part of the administration. It's just interesting. You know, politically, your opponents, you don't typically give them power within your administration, and yet Grover has. That's his way of doing things, right? So anyway, that's beside the point. Just kind of my sudden self-revelation or whatever. But Drew Buchanan talking there the other day about his belief that the chief of police ought to live within the city limits, which is an interesting theory. On the one hand, it kind of makes sense that the, you know, chief would live in the city limits and sort of be invested in the city that way. But maybe not. You know, maybe I thought it was an interesting point. I think it was Autumn Black who brought up the idea that, you know, maybe they need to live close to the Snoozland Center for child needs. You don't want to disqualify those people during your search. So just kind of, you know, maybe there's reasons not to. We talked about this a little bit yesterday with Mayor Grover Robinson. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. I've been enjoying your family task on your week off. So I can tell you, I've been right there as well, trying to get everything out of a and sell, hopefully closing next month. A lot of stuff as well.
Hey, that's great here. And by the way, I just joined you in the 50 club, so we're both 50. Which, by the way, I don't think I'm saying 50 right now. I think when people ask me my age, I'm going to say 40-10. What do you think?
I think that sounds good. I had no idea our birthdays were so close together.
Last week
on my birthday.
I know, very, very close. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that do you think there's a need for the new police chief to actually live in the city limits? I mean, I'm not against it. Just, you know, my curiosity is what might be sacrificed in the interest of the best candidate who might have a valued reason to live outside the city.
You know, I don't know. The question, I think, comes down to, it's hard to say it's the police chief and it's not the sanitation, you know,
yeah,
director. And you know, how you draw the line on those parts as you're working through. I mean, listen, I love Keith. Keith lived a long time in the city. He doesn't live in the city right now. It's hard for Keith to make his direct reports live in the city when he doesn't even live in the city. So, and I don't think it makes Keith a better person because he lives just across Bayou Chico in Warrington than you know what happened. So it's a tough situation. We would love for people to do that, but what I continue to get to people is, you know, Keith would say, hey, I can't live on the water in the city of Pensacola. I can move to Warrington and live on the water, but the prices for me to live on the water in the city of Pensacola are pretty expensive.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point. And as you say, always the best person. And then, you know, where do you draw the line once you do establish that for some people and not for others? I wanted to ask you briefly about the gun buyback program. According to the city agenda for their city council agenda for next week, we've got some of the details. I guess council member Delarian Wiggins is going to try to do it on the 20th at Bill Gregory Park. They have upped the proposal increases the price being paid, $125 for a revolver, $150 for a semi-automatic handgun, and $200 for a semi-automatic rifle. That would theoretically mean fewer weapons can be purchased, though, with that $10,000 cap, right?
In theory, yes. We'll see what happens, and we'll go from there. Obviously, if we get those high-dollar guns, and I guess those discussions that Delarian came back with came back from values that he must have had talking with the police and what they thought was realistic that would get them off the street. So if those are issues that we end up getting, those are the kind of guns we want to get. Those are definitely different than the broken guns that everybody says we're going to get. So, right. I don't know. I mean, like I said before, we talked a little bit last night at the Citizens Police Advisory Council. A lot of this is about building trust. And if West Pensacola, that has been under siege, says, hey, this is something we think that could work for our neighborhood, and it would build trust if you do it, and Delarian says, this is what I need to do to help build trust in my community, then I think $10,000 is worth the investment in establishing trust in that community.
And I'm opposed to the program in general, but I appreciate the argument that, look, if some parents find a gun underneath their teenager's bed and turn it in for $125 or $150, and that would have been used in a crime or, God forbid, a suicide, and somebody's life winds up getting saved, $10,000 is a small price to pay, in theory, for that kind of a thing. So, hey, I wanted to ask you one of the other things. You guys are halfway through it now. First reading passed the new tree ordinance. I think this is really good. This is a significant improvement in the specificity of which trees are protected. It seems to me to make it very tailored to the kind of tree. Like 34 inches for a pine would have been crazy, right?
Well, there are some out there. I mean, those are certainly going to be, getting toward champion-sized trees. So, there is some protection. The only real pine we protect is the longleaf. It's certainly endangered. It was the predominant species here. There were a lot of things I've been supporting on going after and doing those specific things. There are other things that I'm not as convinced. I'm like you with some things. I love trees. I planted them all over the place. They are, every now and then things change in your life. Stuff has to move. You can change something. But we ought to always be replanting trees. That's the other part we're focused on, is how do you replant trees? If you really want trees for tomorrow, you've got to plant them now. And I tell everybody, go in front of Pensacola High School and you look at that huge oak tree. And I can tell you when that huge oak tree was planted, because my parents donated it and planted it out there. It's a great tree. It's not as old as you think it is. It's only about 30 years old. But again, that just goes to show what planting a tree can do and can create for your community.
What is the process? Somebody texted me and asked me this question, and I didn't know the exact answer, so I figured I'd ask you. What's the process if this gets passed and somebody's got a tree on their lot that is a protected tree? What would they do in order to cut that down?
There's going to be an arborist. There's certainly things that can happen. I mean, we are seeing, and we are seeing a variety of people I know have been getting their notices from their insurance company that they've got to do something because of what they're experiencing. So those kind of things will be able to go through an arborist if they need to trim it back or whatever else. We get that. We're not going to make anybody go without insurance. If the tree is the reason it's theirs, if the tree has had some type of toppling effect on because of the storm. I mean, those are things that are in there. But what we are wanting to do is protect those trees, that there is no impact to you, but it is a benefit to the neighborhood and the community. And certainly that's why that's moving forward. Now, we are not going to go hire an arborist, but we are going to be in a contract with the county arborist to serve as our arborist, and they'll be at least able to investigate, give some kind of report back, and then we go from there.
So, Mr. Mayor, the current hospitalizations due to COVID-19 in our area keep dropping. We're now down to 120. That's not good, but we're approaching that 100 threshold. You're going to consider the mask ordinance and all that next time in the city council. When will you stop asking? What's your threshold for stopping asking to have a mask ordinance?
Andrew, my threshold is the same as it's been. It's down to 50. We should be dropping at that point, and then reinstituting. If it goes above 75, we should have a plan, and we should do. I've been saying this a year ago. This is what our experience is going to be. We'll have times where it'll be high acuity, and then we'll have times when there's not. We need to get used to wearing masks, and when we ask you to wear a mask, that you wear it. And we shouldn't wear people out with wearing it when we don't have the prevalent. It's not so prevalent. So, I mean, that was my position in September. It'll be my position now. We will have the same kind of experiences, what we do, and we need people to realize and have faith in doing what we need to do and show them what to do so that they will do it quickly when we ask them to do it, rather than getting tired of it and then having to deal with this long term we did in this last in this winter run up, it's been ridiculous. If we could have had some better support in doing this, better understanding, I think we'd have been better off. But for right now, we're above that number, even at 120. So yeah, we got to keep pushing it down. But you know, we are looking to open City Hall back up and other things in March 12th.
Last thing I was going to ask you about is I know Sherry Myers has I think she's kind of become the outsider lone voice, although she has been that for a long time, but now on the city council. But she's recently threatened to try to de-annex elements of her district 2. This would be a big, long process. Is this a realistic thing that could happen?
Personally, I do not think it's realistic in the sense if you've looked at what it takes. The second reason, I don't think it's even there. The county doesn't even do, you know, as much as she complains about street lighting, even she in the last meeting admitted our street lighting is so much better than there's zero in the county. So, I mean, you know, response times, your insurance, I mean, there'd be a lot of things that everybody would have to look at, and it would be an impact. Plus, just the legality of it is very, very challenging, to say the least. So I don't think it's something that's going to happen. I don't even think Sherry wants it to happen. I think Sherry uses political tactics, and she's totally willing to burn everything down. And that doesn't build good trust, but we're continuing to work. I mean, I work with her all the time. I try to figure out what to do. I mean, it reminds me of my children. When they were little, they wanted to burn everything down. That's just, you know, again, it doesn't establish a good way to work. And most adults eventually figure out how to work better ways to get what they need to do and work, you know, collaboratively. And I mean, I got 6 council members who are doing that. So I think that says a lot, and we're going to keep working on Sherry. We're not going to give up on her, but we're going to just keep working.
All right. Very good. Mayor Grover Robinson, always a pleasure to talk to you. We look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Andrew. You take care. Glad to get you back on the radio.
You remember when Sherry and Grover were like allies and Sherry endorsed him? Oh, man. She's like one of my kids. You know, you guys got to treat her like a kid. You know, a kid wants to burn everything down to get their will and throw a temper tantrum. And, just, you know, she'll come around. I'm not giving up on her. Okay. I mean, I can't really disagree with his assessment about some of the things that she's been doing lately and her place on the city council. You know, I agree with him. I don't think that this threat of de-annexation is a serious one. I think it's just her always complaining about District 2 not getting enough funds and not getting the kinds of things that she wants, like street lighting and sidewalks and the unsafety. And she's frustrated over all these years to not be able to get what she wants. And this is sort of that next, well, how can I get even more attention? We'll just leave the city. It's no good for us. Is that a serious? No, not likely. 550 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic expected to have many long-term, far-reaching consequences. Getting into school, for example.
And many schools going test optional due to the pandemic, more students are applying to more schools, which could result in fewer acceptances to go around.
That's NBC's Liz McLaughlin. Ignore him. That's how Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell apparently plans to deal with the former president. Reports say McConnell's not interested in going back and forth with Donald Trump and would rather focus on finding strong Republican candidates for the midterm.
Pretend it didn't even happen.
Just ignore him. Yeah, there you go. Some scientists believe they've uncovered the oldest DNA on Earth. What, Keith Richards? No. Sorry. New study reports...
Most well-preserved.
reports the DNA extracted from a pair of mammoth specimens looks to be more than 1 million years old. DNA from the molar teeth of fossils that were buried in the permafrost for 1 million years in northeast Siberia.
Doesn't look a day over 900,000.
Really cold there in Siberia.
It is. Yeah. Hey, I still, like, every time I see on the news the story out of Texas about the power grid and the frozen people and the, you know, the total failure of their...
Somebody's got a lot of explaining to do there.
Oh, man. Abbott says the whole board has got to go. Governor Abbott says the whole board...
It's a state. They're the only state in the country that has their own power grid.
Right, and I guess that puts them on a separate footing when it comes to regulations that they've followed. And I guess, like, the western half of the state
El Paso
is on a separate...
El Paso is on the federal
power
grid, and they're fine.
They're fine. No problems there. Yeah. Man, can you imagine in the United States of America, a winter storm comes through and you're all out of power? And you reported yesterday that mayor made the comment about, you know.
Oh, come on, you weaklings.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because, I mean, if you have if you don't have any gas, okay, and you have electric power and it's freezing, what do you do for days and days?
And a lot of places that
they don't have
water froze up.
How do you do boil notice? You know, how do you boil your water for safety if you don't have the electricity and you're not prepared for that? I mean, you know, like some people have said, well, we're prepared for hurricanes. Well, you know, this is different than a hurricane. Nobody's dying from the freezing in the hurricane.
We never have this much ice in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. It's bad.
The hurricane wasn't coming this way.
Exactly. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Question is, if a person gets infected, despite the fact that they've been vaccinated, we refer to that as a breakthrough infection. Does that person have the capability of transmitting the infection to another person? Namely, does vaccine prevent transmission?
Yeah, we know the vaccines, the two of them that are approved so far, and the Johnson & Johnson looks likely to be approved next week, but the two, Moderna and Pfizer, prevent you from getting seriously ill, 95% success rate at that. The question is, do they prevent you from getting other people sick? And until now, we didn't really know, and we still don't really know for sure, but there have been two studies that came out that Fauci was talking about yesterday during the coronavirus task force briefing. One in The Lancet says that with COVID, like other diseases, the amount of virus you have in you is directly proportional to your likelihood of transmitting it to somebody else, called viral load. And another study that comes out of Israel that says that when you have those breakthrough infections against somebody's vaccinated immunity, their viral load is much lower, much, much lower, meaning most likely, yes, you do not transmit it, even if you get it after vaccination.
News, talk, traffic, and weather for Northwest Florida, News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.